Welcome to Signs of Life, exploring survival of consciousness, brought to you by the Forever Family Foundation on the web at www.foreverfamilyfoundation.org.
I can feel you like an ocean that won't seem to let me go.
Blessings to all. Welcome to Signs of Life, brought to you by Forever Family Foundation with our host, Bob Ginsberg. I'm Fran Ginsberg, and our show tonight is sponsored by the Winbridge Institute for Applied Research in Human Potential, and they can be found on the web at winbridge.org. Our guest tonight is Dr. Penny Sartori, and if you have a question, comment, or would like to talk to our guest, the toll-free number here is 888-627-6008. So, Bob, anything new and exciting to share?
No, I was skimming through, catching up with some articles on my desk, some of them old, some of them new. I put one in front of you I thought you'd find interesting about a bit of a scandal involving a Veterans Administration bus.
Like there's not enough scandals in the Veterans Administration.
Right.
Okay.
But this one caught my eye for obvious reasons. Did you have a chance to read the article?
Well, I'm looking at the title of it. VA boss pressed workers to see psychic.
Right. So apparently, you know, this woman who's a boss at the VA kind of wanted to go see a psychic who was, I think, a friend. And
I think it's the wife of a coworker.
Wife of a coworker. And she encouraged, in quotes, you know, the workers that worked under her to accompany her, you know, and pay the fee, you know, to visit the psychic. So word got out, and a little bit of a scandal, you know, developed. And oddly enough, as usually happens when you draw attention to something, they. The IRS got involved and determined that the psychic wasn't declaring the income. So,
right. And so if you're wondering, this took place for our listeners who want to be wary of, you know, we're always cautioning everybody to be careful. Everybody's hanging up a shingle. Everybody's doing readings. Everybody wants to make money in this industry. And then there's also the followers, like this lady, who just become psychic junkies and just want to, you know, have psychics, and psychics. Anyway, this took place in Pennsylvania, and we don't know the last name of the psychic. It may be different than her husband's name, which is Hodge, H-O-D-G-E, who worked with Lucy Filipov, however you want to pronounce that. And they apparently have been reprimanded for "quote unquote" this type of activity, but they where this article stops is we don't know if they were punished or how much they were punished. But I think it's interesting that now the IRS is going after this Mrs. Hodge for $20,000 of psychic income that she did not report.
Right. Well, you know, it just goes to show. Now, this was a there were some ulterior motives here of supporting, you know, a coworker. But we know that people like to go to such, you know, gatherings. They're usually not coerced, you know, but listen, all over the place. And it's not only now, you know, in the Victorian age. I mean, this was a form of entertainment. Everybody went to seances and the visit with mediums and so forth, and this goes on today. Some people look at it more as a form of entertainment. They don't necessarily believe that the medium or psychic can actually do what they claim to do, but it's a good show, you know. But then mixed in with that are others that are grieving and desperately want to make contact, you know, with their deceased loved one, and they frequent the medium for a totally different purpose.
Right,
and it's not good that both are in the same group, you know?
It is not, because, you know, people will turn around and say, oh, they charge money for this God-given gift. Well, if you want to look at it from that perspective, that it is something that comes from the greater universe, and particularly for these people to walk this journey as mediums connecting to the dead, that quote-unquote gift is for the purpose of helping people who are on the edge. They're bereaved, their grief is so deep, they need to know they're going to see their loved ones again. They need the services of a medium. And to mix in all of this stuff with psychics and all this other kind of crazy stuff, in fact, in this article, they say investigators said that they were uncertain whether his wife's primary skill is predicting the future or communicating with the dead. So that was unclear. But what was clear was that the VA employees who showed up and left after making their cash payments to the psychic told the auditors that they were uncomfortable with the evening's festivities.
Well, that could be for a lot of reasons. One could be because of the ethics of the psychic or the medium involved.
Right.
Two, you know, maybe they didn't believe in life after death for a variety of reasons. You know, it could have been religious, it could have just been personal beliefs, and you know, and here they were sort of role playing. You know, so that's an uncomfortable, you know, situation.
Yeah.
But when I read that, I just took it, you know, where they said the investigators were unsure whether, you know, she was, you know, getting psychic information or communicating with the dead. I took that to mean, like, it'd be worse if she was claiming to communicate with the dead, because that couldn't possibly be real.
No, I didn't take it that way. I just figured, you know, either way, what she did was wrong.
Yeah. I was reading another article about the afterlife's new appeal. That caught my eye. You know,
it's like a new appeal.
Yeah, you know, because listen, we've been reading books about the history of religion and philosophy and mediumship and cultures going back thousands of years. So I don't know whether it always seems that at certain times. Things people contemplate the afterlife more so than other eras, and you know, in this case, the author was saying a lot has to do with what's going on in the world. You know, like for instance, after 9/11, you know, there were more people that were talking about grief,
right.
And then when they're talking about grief, but part of that is also talking about a search for meaning. And the two. So in times of turmoil, wars, famines, natural disasters, which has happened throughout, you know, the ages, people will naturally and expectedly, you know, have an interest in the afterlife.
I think historically, if you go back to the Lincolns, President Lincoln, his wife who sought out mediums all the time, and he did as well, and they had them as guests in the White House. They lost several children, and yet the people portrayed her as strange.
Right.
Because she was doing that.
Yeah. Well, it was also interesting, the author said that she saw a link between the interest in death and the interest in solving criminal mysteries, like the popularity of the CSI shows.
Oh.
Because both phenomena respond to a need for answers. You know, so people like shows like CSI because it gives them some relief at the end of the day. And then she equates that with, you know, figuring out the puzzle of what happens after, you know, after.
So then do you also think that a lot of people sought out mediums and or psychics because they had their own personal experiences? I mean, during times of turmoil and loss, people have their own personal experience that seems to also increase.
Right. So,
rather than thinking you're going nuts, you might seek out their service.
That's possible as a validation for your own experiences. Well, we have a wonderful guest tonight, Dr. Penny Sartori. So Stay with us. We'll be back in a few minutes. We'll be talking about unseen worlds and near-death phenomena. So stay with us. We'll be right back.
Does consciousness survive death? Can technology be used to interact with the deceased? Can hearing from the dead heal the living? At the Windbridge Institute, we are working to answer these and similar questions. Through our studies with certified research mediums, we are examining psychic abilities and communication with the other side, offering insights into the limitless nature of consciousness and unlocking the possibilities of our bodies, minds, and spirits. Be a part of it. Become a Windbridge member today. Please visit www.windbridge.org to learn more.
When grieving the loss of a loved one, sometimes a hug is just what you need. Hugs from Heaven are lightly weighted shoulder wraps that are made from the fabric of your loved one's clothing. Your clothing can also be made into memory pillows and sachets. Each Hugs from Heaven is handmade with loving care and is as unique as your loved one's spirit. Visit us at hugsfromheaven.com. That's hugs, spelled with a Z, from heaven.com. Who couldn't use a hug?
Hello, I am Lloyd Auerbach, parapsychologist and author. You can learn much more about life after death, precognition, mind-matter interactions, remote viewing, ghost hunting, and other psychic experiences and research through the acclaimed Distance Learning Parapsychological Studies program at HCH Institute. Our courses are audio-based with additional written and video material. Call HCH at 925-283-3941 or visit www.hypnotherapytraining.com. Our courses include The Search for Life After Death, Being Psychic, Psychokinesis and Precognition, Ghost Hunting, Theories and Models of Psychic Experience, and more. Taken singly or as part of the certificate program, these courses will enrich your knowledge of parapsychology and the range of psychic phenomena. You'll learn about being psychic yourself. Visit www.hypnotherapytraining.com or call 925-283-3941 for information about our individual distance learning courses and certificate program.
I would like to introduce you to the Forever Family Foundation, a nonprofit organization whose mission is to provide a forum where individuals and families who have suffered the loss of a loved one can turn for support, information, and hope. We believe in the continuity of the family, even though a member has left the physical world. The Forever Family Foundation is a joint effort of scientists, research mediums, and interested people who support the premise that life does not end with physical death. We wish to prove that the bond of the family cannot be broken even by death. We invite anyone who's trying to cope with the loss of a loved one to contact the Forever Family Foundation at 631-425-7707. That's 631-425-7707. Or you can find us on the web at foreverfamilyfoundation.org. After-death communication is an accepted occurrence in many cultures throughout the world. But for many others, proof of this phenomenon is essential. And research shows that contact helps move people through loss and grief. The Sign Registry allows people to register signs that they, after passing, plan on communicating to specific loved ones. Contact the Forever Family Foundation at foreverfamilyfoundation.org or go directly to thesignregistry.com.
Welcome back to Signs of Life, brought to you by the Forever Family Foundation.
For those just tuning in, our guest tonight is Dr. Penny Sartori. Our sponsor is the Windbridge Institute for Applied Research in Human Potential, and they can be found on the web at windbridge.org. Bob?
And Dr. Penny Sartori worked as a nurse in a British hospital for 21 years, 17 of those being in intensive care. She's highly experienced and skilled in her role as an intensive care staff nurse. She's conducted unique and extensive research into the near-death experiences of her patients. In 2005, she was awarded a PhD for her research into near-death experiences. Her work has received worldwide attention and media coverage. She's spoken at many conferences, both nationally and internationally, and her work has even received the attention of Prince Charles, I understand. Dr. Sartori regularly gives lectures and study days on NDEs and the spiritual aspects of patient care at the end of life. Her 2008 academic monograph, The Near-Death Experiences of Hospitalized Intensive Care Patients, a five-year clinical study, was published by Edwin Millen Press. And the book we're going to be talking about tonight, her latest, is called The Wisdom of Near-Death Experiences, How Understanding NDEs Can Help Us Live More Fully. Her website is drpennysartori.com, and that's drpennysartori, S-A-R-T-O-R-I.com. Welcome to the show, Penny.
Hi, it's lovely to be here.
And, you know, so I mentioned in the intro your professional career was as a nurse, and the first time that you came upon a patient who was resuscitated and then described having a near-death experience, what was your reaction?
Well, the first time I ever heard about these, I didn't know they were called near-death experiences at the time. And I can remember I was a student nurse, and I'd looked after this lady for about 10 days in a row. And she got to know me quite well, and she got to trust me. And on that last day, on the 10th day, she said to me, you know, when I was in the coronary care unit, I died, and I went to heaven. And I said, oh, did you? And she said, yes, she said. And I left my body. I rose out of my body and I looked down from above and I could see myself lying on the bed. And then she said, it all went black. And I felt like I traveled through this tunnel and I got to the other side. And there was my dead mother, who said, you know, you shouldn't be here. It's not your time. And she sent me back. And she said, I wanted to stay there. I was really happy where I was. And she said, I turned around to look at my mother again. And all of a sudden, it went black. And I could hear a voice in the distance. And the voice was saying, it's okay. We've got her. She's coming around. And she said that was the voice of the doctor on the coronary care unit. And I can remember listening to this lady. But I thought to myself, it was just a hallucination. And I thought that she'd just been given too much diamorphine, and that's all I thought it was. And I didn't even question the lady further about her experience. And it was only a few years later, when I became interested in near-death experiences, that I realized that's what that lady was reporting to me that day. And I was kicking myself that I hadn't asked her more questions at the time, you know. So that was the first time I'd come across them.
So you can understand why people today, you know, dismiss these experiences as hallucinations, because you were once there. You dismissed it yourself.
Yeah, that's right. I had this preconception that all that was just some sort of hallucination. And I never really looked at it in depth after that, until I really got into my research a few years later.
Mm. And that was quite an experience that you just described, because, I mean, there were a lot of classic or, you know, common experiences reported by NDEers. I mean, the woman described, going through a tunnel. She described seeing deceased loved ones. And then she also described being told, you know, to come back. And so are those three things that you found come up often in these accounts that you've been researching?
Yes, they do. They came up quite a lot. And in fact, in the hospital research that I did, the most common component was meeting deceased relatives who told them they had to go back. It wasn't their time.
Mm. Do you find that there's a common misconception about near-death experience? I know that in this country, in the United States, there's always a story on the media, and it always is something like, you know, so-and-so had a near-death experience. And when you go to read the article or to listen to the commentator, it's always somebody that had a brush, you know, with death, but had nothing to do with what we know is a near-death experience. Is it the same misconception in the UK as it is here?
Sometimes there is, yes. You know, some people you hear reports of that, but the actual near-death experience itself is when someone does come very close to death, and then they have this set of components which were first identified by Dr. Raymond Moody in his book Life After Life in 1975. And, you know, they have these components. They can have an out-of-body experience first. They could travel through a dark tunnel towards a light. They get into the light, and the light as well could be very bright, but it doesn't hurt their eyes. And sometimes it's almost like it has a magnetic quality, and they feel very drawn to the light. Now, when they get into the light, they meet deceased relatives or friends. Sometimes they meet a being of light, which is associated with the person's culture. And sometimes they find themselves in beautiful gardens with lush green grass and vividly coloured flowers. And they're so comfortable there that they want to stay there. You know, they have no pain. If they've previously been in any pain, that disappears. And it's just a really pleasant feeling and joyful feeling. Sometimes they may often have a life review as well, where they can see the whole of their life replayed before their eyes. And very often it's described as being relived as well. And the life review to me is very, very interesting, because sometimes it can be lived through the eyes of another person that they interacted with. So that person gets the experiencer then gets to feel the impact of their actions on other people. So, for example, if they've been unpleasant to someone or they've been violent to someone, it's almost as if they're in the shoes of that person and they feel like what it's like to be on the receiving end of that. And conversely as well, if they've been particularly nice and kind to someone, they also feel like what it's like to receive that kindness as well. But very often, you know, they get sent back, they're told it's not their time. And when they get back into their body, sometimes, you know, they know that something very overwhelming has happened to them, but they don't understand the experience. So sometimes the people are afraid to discuss their experience because, you know, are the nurses or the doctors going to think that they're crazy? And it's certainly not the case, you know. So, you know, we need to have a greater understanding of these experiences so we can support patients as they're recovering from their illness.
Mm. And you just did an excellent job of talking about some of the experiences that people report. But it's true that not every experiencer has all of these things. I mean, they may only have one or two of the things that you mentioned, right?
Yes, that's right. Some people may just have an out-of-body experience. Some people may not have an out-of-body experience, but they may have maybe one or two of those components that I've described.
Yeah.
So each case is unique as well, you know. Each person has a slight different variation of the experience.
Mm. So just to back up a bit, you know, so you're at you're still at the hospital, obviously, and you have this tremendous interest now in the near-death experience. And I would imagine that there was some resistance, you know, from the powers that be at the hospital. So how did you manage to convince them to allow you to embark upon this long-term study, especially it may be something that they didn't even believe in? That was a challenge, wasn't it?
It was a bit, to be honest with you, yes. And I can remember I had to get all of the permission of the people I worked with, certainly. And I was lucky, really, because I worked in a very supportive department. And at first, you know, a lot of people thought it was a bit of a joke kind of thing, you know, and they didn't take it that seriously. But when they realised exactly what I was doing, they then saw the value in it because they knew that it could benefit patient care. So they became very supportive to me. So I was lucky, really, that I had the support of my colleagues.
And they were lucky that that you embarked upon it, because I'm sure you taught a lot of people a lot of things. Patients and administrative and staff as well. The thing that's most interesting is the subtitle of your book, you know, how understanding NDEs can help us live more fully. So maybe we can get into that a little bit. I mean, what can a non-experiencer learn about a death experience that can help them navigate their physical lives?
I think, you know, when you read these accounts of near-death experiences, they have such a wonderful message. You know, when you really engage with them fully, that's one big thing that I learned. And through talking to so many people who've had the experience, you really get a feel for what they've been through. And one of the things that struck me in particular was that during the experience, people feel very much interconnected with everything, you know, with that other people and with nature as well. And basically the underlying of message of the near-death experience is to treat others as you would wish to be treated yourself. And I just think, you know, if we all lived by that message, how wonderful everything would be if we put the if we considered others and the good of others before putting ourselves first sometimes, you know. And I think also as well through contemplating our own mortality. You know, I'd never thought of my own death at all before I started doing my research. And it made me think, you know, what if I was to die? And working in intensive care, you see people who they leave their house in the morning to go to work and maybe they have an accident on the way to work and they don't actually get there and they end up in the ICU. And it makes me realise that we never know. The only thing for certain for all of us is that we're all going to die, but we don't know when or how we're going to die. And when I started thinking about that, it made me appreciate all of the things that I have in my life. You know, sometimes I'd be thinking, oh, I'd really like to do this, or I'd like to have this or that. And it would sort of detract from the very things that I do have in my life. So I think I've been very much more appreciative of everything that I've got. And of course, that has a really beneficial effect for the relationships in my life. You know, it's really deepened them as well. So I think what I've learned is more about life, actually, than about death.
Well put. And for the rest of us, besides noticing that interconnectedness, if we study the reports of the near-death experiences and come to know that there's a life beyond the physical, that we can start living our lives a little bit differently and not living our lives in fear of death, but enjoy more of what we have. So I'm sure you recognize that, you know, early on. Is that something that you find among the experiences, is that they lose their fear of dying? Do any of them still fear death?
Yeah, well, absolutely. That's one of the biggest after effects, is that the people have absolutely no fear of death at all. And that was something I was interested to look at with my hospital research. And what I found with the people in my hospital research is that those who had an experience which was quite deep, in that it had quite a lot of the components, they were the people who had absolutely no fear of death at all. Now, there were a few people in my study who had just one or two of the components, and their fear of death was reduced, but they were still a little unsure. It hadn't gone completely, but certainly for the ones who had the deep experience, they were adamant that death is absolutely nothing to be afraid of. And they, you know, it wasn't that they wanted to die, but they said that when it was their time, they knew that it was nothing to be afraid of because they'd already experienced it before.
Interesting. So there are various degrees. I mean, there are deep NDEs and there are more shallow or less deep, I don't know how to put it, but
yes,
less significant, you know.
That's right.
Yeah. What about... I think you did mention it in the book, and it was something I wanted to ask you. A lot of spiritualists and metaphysical practitioners speak of a silver cord that connects the physical body to the ethereal body or the soul. Is that something that came up in the hospital research? Anybody mention that?
No, it wasn't. I didn't have anyone who reported seeing the cord, but I've got other cases where people have written to me over the years, and I have got quite a few of those where people report seeing the cord, where they've been propelled out of their body, and sometimes they feel as if they've travelled great distances. I recently had an email from a man who, at a young age, he was a teenager, teenager, and he had this out-of-body experience where he left his body and he travelled over an ocean, and he was watching a ferry crossing the ocean, and he kind of went into a room in the ferry and he could see two people arguing. And as soon as he realised he was kind of encroaching on their privacy, he thought, I really shouldn't be here, I should be back home. And as soon as he thought that, he said he watched himself going back and being pulled along with this silver cord and back into his body back home.
Interesting. You know, I was surprised to learn in the research that you conducted in the hospital that you did something that some of the more recent studies are attempting, where you put symbols, you know, at a height in the operating arena to see if people could identify that. Am I recalling that right? Did you do that?
I did, and that's what I did for the whole time. I had various different images, and they were mounted on very brightly coloured paper to attract attention, and they were situated at each patient's bedside, and they were about 8 foot off the ground, so you could only see these if you were out of your body. They were concealed behind ridges. And I did have about 8 people who had the out-of-body type experience, but no one actually saw the hidden symbol. And the reason for this was that the out-of-body experiences, the quality of them, varied amongst the patients. So some people just had an experience where they rose just a few centimetres above the body, so they weren't in a position to view the symbol. Some people floated into the middle of the room, so that was opposite to where the symbol was situated. But there were 2 people who did leave their body, and they were in a position where they could have viewed the symbols. But both of those patients said to me they were so interested in what was going on around their body that they weren't looking to where the symbols were situated. And one man said, you know, if you'd have told me beforehand that there was a hidden symbol there, he said, I would have floated up and I'd have looked at it and I'd have come back and told you. But no one actually did see it.
You know, it makes perfect sense to me, because I know if I was in that same situation, especially for those that don't necessarily believe that they can survive death, and then suddenly they find themselves, you know, dead and floating above their bodies, I'd be so amazed and in such awe trying to understand that I don't think I'd be taking the time to look at symbols, you know.
Yeah.
So I think you're exactly right. So it's odd, you know, well, it's not odd, but it's interesting that that's trying to be replicated now, like in the AWARE study and other studies as well, right?
Yes, that's right.
Yeah. So were you the pioneer of this? I guess so.
Well, Dr. Sampania, who's doing the AWARE study, he and myself started our studies in the UK at the same time, and he did a similar thing. His study was over a year, whereas mine was over 5 years. So we did both do the same sort of study, but it's been done before as well. And I think probably the earliest researchers of that kind are Professor Janice Holden and Dr. Madeline Lawrence from the United States. So that was done back in the late 80s.
Mm. What about the reports that experiences of them, you know, when they come back and get resuscitated, they find themselves having enhanced intuitive abilities, you know, or even sensitivities like electrical? Is that common?
Yeah, that's right. Now, that's something that really fascinates me, because some people feel like after their experience, their electromagnetic field changes, so they can't wear a wristwatch or any kind of watch, any watch or clock, whether it's a digital one or a wind-up one, they will malfunction for them. They work perfectly well for other people, but not for them. You know, I've had quite a few people say that they've taken their watches to the jewellers and the jeweller can find nothing wrong with it, but it'll work for other people. And also as well, electrical equipment, you know, things like computers, they'll crash abnormally quickly in the presence of some people. Credit card machines as well, they're notorious for not for malfunctioning when people are trying to pay for their goods and things. So
yeah,
that's Yeah, that's something that really does fascinate me, because I'd like to do more research with this, because it's something that we could potentially measure as well. So that's something that's on the back of my mind to do in the future for research as well.
Yeah,
but some people do.
Yeah. No, I mean, because you're right, it could potentially be measured, and, you know, it's as if they're imbued with this this energy that we can't understand, you know, an unseen energy. So that'll be a fascinating study. We're talking with Dr. Penny Sartori. The book is The Wisdom of Near-Death Experiences, How Understanding NDEs Can Help Us Live More Fully, and the website is drpennysartori.com. We'll be back with our guest to talk more about near-death experiences, and perhaps we can get into deathbed visions and terminal lucidity. So stay with us, and we'll be back in a couple of minutes.
Does consciousness survive death? Can technology be used to interact with the deceased? Can hearing from the dead heal the living? At the Windbridge Institute, we are working to answer these and similar questions. Through our studies with certified research mediums, we are examining psychic abilities and communication with the other side, offering insights into the limitless nature of consciousness and unlocking the possibilities of our bodies, minds, and spirits. Be a part of it. Become a Windbridge member today. Please visit www.windbridge.org to learn more. Starseed Gems Studios in Cocoa, Florida fuses cremation ashes within art glass, making beautiful stones. The ashes are visible in the darkness and resemble a beautiful night sky. Starseed Gems, developed by the parents of a young man who passed away, are set in hand-sculpted silver and gold settings. Prices start at $150. Visit www.starseedgems.com or call 321-632-7770. That's www.starseedgems.com or 321-632-7770.
The American Association of Electronic Voice Phenomena has always been international and concerned with more than just EVP. To better serve the public, the AAEVP is now Association Transcommunication, or ATRANSC. Their new website is atransc.org, and their motto is Objective Evidence of Survival. The directors believe people should know that death is not dying, and what we learn now applies to what we will learn hereafter.
I would like to introduce you to the Forever Family Foundation, a nonprofit organization whose mission is to provide support for families who have suffered the loss of a loved one. We believe in the continuity of the family, even though a member has left the physical world. We invite anyone who's trying to cope with the loss of a loved one to contact the Forever Family Foundation at 631-425-7707 or on the web at foreverfamilyfoundation.org. For years, people have been reporting communication from those no longer in our physical world. Historically, science and religion have taught us to ignore such messages. Yet, there is now substantial scientific evidence to the contrary. In response to this, the Forever Family Foundation has developed a sign registry to demonstrate the existence of this other dimension. On our website, people can register signs that they, after passing, plan on communicating to a specific loved one. Upon the registrant's passing, the stored information can be verified by the recipient of these signs. Participants will be taking part not only in a grand scientific experiment, but in providing the greatest gift of all, the knowledge that we survive our physical death. For more information, contact the Forever Family Foundation at 631-425-7707, or you can find us on the web at foreverfamilyfoundation.org. Or to register a sign, go directly to thesignregistry.com.
Welcome back to Signs of Life, brought to you by the Forever Family Foundation.
Yeah, If you're just tuning in, our guest tonight is Dr. Penny Sartori. Our sponsor is the Winbridge Institute for Applied Research in Human Potential, and they can be found on the web at winbridge.org. Our Holidays Pass 2015 raffle is up on the website now, waiting for your name to be entered. So let me quickly explain how the raffle works and why you need to enter now, even though the drawing is December 23rd. The five winners, each receiving a one-hour medium reading with Tracy Lee Nash, Dr. Neil Zapowski, Nancy Marlowe, Destin Livers, or Kathy Towle, are chosen from a computer program that selects five numbers randomly from the pool of consecutive numbers assigned to each entry. So enter, enter often, and have lots of different numbers. And okay, now listen up, because this is big. Have you ever tried to bend a spoon without using your own muscle and might, but instead using unseen energy? Have you called upon spirit to move objects in a room while you observe? These are a few of the scheduled workshop events set for our annual Afterlife Exploration Retreat in Chester, Connecticut, this July 24th through 26th. Don't miss this chance to work directly with certified mediums Janet Nohavik and Joe Scheel, both educated at the Arthur Findlay College in England. Don't miss your chance to learn and experience many hands-on applications that will not only amaze you, but show you that we really are certainly more than our physical bodies. It's easy to travel to by plane, train, or automobile, and the food is unbelievable. Just ask the people who keep coming back each year. And did I mention that all rooms have private baths and air conditioning? There are also some member-only seats left at our upcoming webinar on June 30th, Mediumship 102, with certified medium Joe Scheel. You do not have to have attended Mediumship 101 to benefit from this webinar. All the details are on our events page on the Forever Family Foundation website. Please follow the directions to reserve your seats. Member seats are only $5, non-members pay $20, and if you like Joe here, and you will, you're sure to love him in person at the July retreat. Also, watch for additional webinars as they're posted to the Forever Family Foundation events page. And Texas, are you listening? You finally are back on the event map with FFF certified medium Lee Ashley in Visitations and Validations, an evening of spirit communication on September 15th in Austin, Texas. Thank you to all our volunteers who stepped forward to make this happen. For our Kim Russo fans, remember when we used to have events with Teresa Caputo and it was easy to get a seat? Kim Russo is taking time off from her busy filming schedule of her two shows, The Haunting of and Psychic Intervention, to donate her time to Forever Family Foundation on October 24th for a celestial evening of spirit communication at Long Island University CW Post Campus in Brookville, New York. Get your seats online on our website while you can. She will be joined by newly certified medium Joe Peretta. And December, as I mentioned before, is not far away. So for those of you who wait for our annual Holidays Past events, we have two scheduled. Joanne Gerber will be in Natick, Massachusetts, and Joe Scheel will join Janet Nohavik as a team in Pompton Lakes, New Jersey. Both events are on December 12th. And finally, please, please, please help us keep all of our programs going by visiting our website and clicking on the donation button. It's on every page. Because of the work we do not receive the grants and funding that all other traditional not-for-profits enjoy. And speaking of donations, you can always use the Amazon link from the Forever Family Foundation website before you shop on Amazon. Amazon will make a donation to Forever Family Foundation as a percentage of what's in your shopping cart when you check out. And if you don't shop on Amazon, consider going to iGive.com, mentioning Forever Family Foundation as the charity of your choice. And then when you shop on the Internet, automatically those over 1,500 stores online that are associated with iGive.com will make donations to Forever Family Foundation. And finally, if you are a business interested in advertising on our show, contact us via email at radio@foreverfamilyfoundation.org or call the office at 631-425-7707. All right, I'm done, Bob.
Okay, and we're back with Dr. Penny Sartori. The book, The Wisdom of Near-Death Experiences, How Understanding NDEs Can Help Us Live More Fully. Penny, one thing I wanted to ask you about, I know there were some accounts that you collected in the book sometimes people, it appears that they can control the actual time that they let go, so to speak, and cross over. Is that that's something that you found from your work as a nurse? That people,
yes.
Yeah.
Oh, yes. I saw that such a lot when I worked in the ICU. And, you know, it's almost as if patients were waiting for a specific time before they actually did die. They were, you know, unconscious at the time and well into the process of death. But it seems on some level that they had control. For example, in the ICU, we get visitors. They can stay most, you know, all day long if they want to. And many times, you know, I would be at the bedside and I'd need to carry out some nursing care. So I would say to the family, you know, why don't you go and have a break down the canteen and, you know, have a quick coffee or something, and I can do some nursing care and then you can come back. And I noticed several times looking after patients that as soon as the family left, their condition deteriorated very rapidly. And many times I had to run down to the canteen to get the relatives back. And by the time we got back, the patient had actually died. And at the time, the patients were really upset about it. And the relatives were upset that they weren't there. But when I saw that this was a pattern, you know, I think sometimes it's the love of the family that keeps the dying person grounded in this life. And I think when the family go, it's almost as if they're giving, they're helping their loved one, really. So there was no need for them to be upset about it, because what they did was a great gift for the dying person, so that they were easy. It was easier for them to make their transition. And also what I saw is that some people waited for an estranged family member to arrive, maybe, or maybe a family who lived abroad. Sometimes the patient was expected to die, but as soon as the family member from abroad had arrived, the patient died shortly after their arrival. And sometimes they wait for special events as well, like a wedding or a christening to pass. And as soon as it's passed, the patient will die then. So I think people do have far more control over the time of death than what we realize.
So it does make sense when people are surrounding their loved one on the deathbed, and especially when their loved one is in a lot of physical pain, and they say to them, you know, they reassure them that it's okay to let go, to detach from the physical. Do you find that sometimes, that after they get permission, so to speak, it makes it easier to transition?
Yes, it certainly does. It helps a lot, you know. Once they have that permission, they know that, you know, it does make that transition much easier for them, yes.
Mm. And I know I'm totally fascinated, and I've kind of experienced it myself, how people have deathbed visions. And I was shocked from reading everything I could about the subject, just how frequent they are. Does that match with your experience, that the people near death have these visitations of deceased loved ones?
Yes, they do. And I think if you speak to most nurses, that they can tell you stories of things that they have witnessed. And it's quite commonly accepted, you know, amongst nurses. And when I first started on the ward, when I was a student nurse, I can remember my first day. I was sitting in the office and we were having a report from the night nurse. And she said, you know, the man in bed 6 in section C, he'll be dead by the end of the morning. He's been talking to his dead mother since about 3 o'clock this morning. And I looked around because I thought, are they trying to wind me up because it's my first day? And all the other nurses carried on, you know. So I went out and after the report, and I went to this man's bedside. And indeed, he was gesturing and smiling at someone who I couldn't see. And I went back and forth to his bed throughout the course of the morning. And I can remember it was about 11 o'clock in the morning. And he suddenly got some energy from somewhere and he tried to sit up. And he had his arms outstretched as if he was in a loving hug sort of thing. And he had a big smile on his face. And then he lay back down and it looked like he'd gone to sleep, but in fact he died, and it was exactly what the night nurse had predicted. He would be dead by the end of the morning, and he was. But he looked really peaceful, and I'll always remember that look on his face because he had such a lovely smile, and he looked so peaceful doing it, you know. And indeed, when my own grandfather was dying as well, I can remember the few days before he died, he would be pointing to the doorway in the bedroom because we nursed him at home. And he'd be saying, look who's there. Well, we couldn't see anyone, but he clearly could see someone, and they were giving him great comfort as well. So, I've witnessed it throughout the whole of my nursing career. I've seen it quite a lot.
Yeah, and the implications there are that we it's very likely that we all have assistance when we cross over. Do you look at it that way?
Yes, that's right. There was a big study done back in the 70s by Osis and Harrelson, and they looked at this in India and in America as well, and it was observations of doctors and nurses. And what it seems is that these people have like a takeaway purpose, so that they're there to guide the dying into the next transition after their death. So it's a nice sort of comforting experience for the person.
Absolutely. And then I know that, you know, we're running towards the end of our time, but I did want to mention, which you touched on in the book, you know, this terminal lucidity, you know, where people who are either physically or mentally incapacitated for various reasons at the end, and they're incoherent, or maybe it's even have Alzheimer's, and then all of a sudden they have these clear and lucid explanations. I mean, is there a medical explanation for that?
Well, no, there's not. And that is really very interesting to me because, you know, people with Alzheimer's as well, it is a malfunctioning part of their brain, which is, you know, stopping that coherence. Yet what is interesting, a few days before they die, or maybe, you know, a few hours before they die, they suddenly regain that lucidity, and they're able to recognize family members and converse with them in ways that they haven't been able to do so for quite some time. So that throws a whole new sort of questioning about consciousness and what it is, you know. So that is something that we really do need to pay attention to.
Yeah, and if there's no medical explanation, maybe it is a spiritual one. You know, we're given that last time to communicate. Penny, it's been wonderful speaking with you. I'll tell everybody that the book, The Wisdom of Near-Death Experiences, if you're going to read a book about near-death experiences and you haven't yet, this is one to read. It's filled with accounts and research when Penny was on the front lines. She wasn't doing this in a clinical atmosphere. She was living and breathing this for many years. So it has a tremendous insight, and I would recommend it highly. The website where you can learn more is drpennysartori.com. That's drpenny, and then sartori.com. Penny, thanks again for joining us, and we hope to speak with you again soon.
Thanks, Bob. It's been a pleasure.
Okay, take care. Have a good evening.
We now ask our listeners to please join us in our Healing Energy Circle prayer. May the universe create a channel of healing energy from all participating listeners, sending that energy to those who are in need of recovery of the physical body, spirit, and mind. As we visualize the healing light upon Betty Kovach, Erica, Phyllis McPhee, Doug Berry, Wendy Lippo, Eileen Lafada, Patty Potter, Michael Tim, Lynn Austin, Glenna Irwin, Stanley Mulan, Tanya Cash, Andy O'Brien, Johnny Jackson, Henry Stark, Karen Bryan, Richard Andrea, Joe, Scott Calzia, Donald Peterson, Judy Pernick, Donna Mello, David Mello, Kimberly Saavedra, Rachel Skandarian, Jeanette Davies, Marianne Pierzga, Julie Beischel, Ann Hutchinson, David Hayes, Rita Springer, Vicki Steffi, Jean Lash, Tracy Lee Nash, Eddie Roll, Tom Donahue, Tim Donahue, Renata Santarelli, Lynn LeClaire, and Matt Mello. Now let us, as one consciousness, give our energy of loving thought by praying like this. To love one another, to treat others as we would like to be treated, to forgive others and return love for hate, kindness for anger, to spread this feeling to everyone, to our fellow man, as well as the earth and its environment. And now it's time to say,
our loved ones are only a heartbeat away.
And science is going to prove it.
Good night, everyone.